From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 704, Business Email Compromise with guest Niall Merrigan. Recorded Thursday, June 4th, 2020. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. Thanks for coming back to Run As Radio, another one on our pandemic series. And I hope you and yours are doing just fine. And we keep on keeping on. It's an interesting time to be in IT. Bringing back one of my favorites today, Niall Merrigan, who's this Irish guy who lives in Norway. And he works at Capgemini in Stavanger and is the head of cybersecurity and is also a Microsoft regional director, a Microsoft MVP, and a general rugby nut, which means he shouts a lot. Welcome back, friend.
Good to be back, Mr. Campbell. It's always nice to have a chat with you in the morning. Well, your morning, my evening.
My morning, your evening. We're both drinking the brown liquid, I suspect, but mine is tea and yours is probably not. Okay. Coffee at 6 o'clock
well,
at night?
You know, decaf. Mm. You know, I'm getting old.
Yeah, no kidding. But you also have little kids still too, right?
Yeah, they generally, we like to call them tiny hackers. They're our rules lawyers is the best way of describing them.
I see. They're learning the system, are they?
Well, you know what? My son, I love that we chat about this. My son, what we did is we got him an Android device for Christmas.
And how old?
He's 8 years old.
Okay.
And he's allowed to play, you know, 1 or 2 hours. You know, he has Minecraft on and he has other things.
Right.
And so at 9 o'clock in the evening, it goes into you need to go to bed mode, which means it shuts off or doesn't shut off. It just locks all the apps down and just says you need to go to bed.
Right.
So we send him to bed and we go up about 15 minutes later and we hear him giggling. And I'm like, what are you doing? And he goes, look what I did, Papa. And I was like, okay. He's playing with his phone. And they're going, you shouldn't be able to do this.
Yes.
So what he had done was he'd gone to the adult or the parent login. Okay. And then that brings up the Google homepage or the Google login page, Gmail login page, that thing. Mm-hmm. And he clicks on that and then goes down to the GIF keyboard so he can look at all the different GIFs.
Nice.
And I'm sitting there going, I'm very proud.
Yes.
I love this. Yes. But as an adult, I'm like, God damn, son, go to sleep.
But you are growing a little hacker there. He talked to me about the life in Stavanger in pandemic times, because I think Norway's had a fairly successful lockdown.
Yeah, we on the 12th of March, they announced all the kindergartens were going to close, the schools were going to close, and they had highly recommended home office, and they had there was a whole lockdown of a lot of stuff.
Right.
And we've slowly started opening up. And one of the best metrics we have right now is there is no one in hospital with COVID-19. There is no one in very few kind of increases. And we've had a very low death rate, which I'm very thankful for. It has been, we are very lucky in Norway. We have the Norwegian Oil Fund, which actually I'm going to talk about a little bit later. And that helps a lot when they want to do kind of injection packages and whatever. But they allowed back the kids to kindergarten, and schools are open up to about grade 4 now.
Okay.
But a lot of the older schools now will have to wait until next year or be kind of after summertime.
Right. Next school year.
Yeah. So there's been quite a bit of homeschooling. Norway's quite flexible on it, but it has been tough for a lot of people. I know that. I won't say it's been easy for everybody, but generally everyone's kind of like stuck to the whole 2 meter away from each other rule. I think it's the Nordics have it. It's okay with this.
Yeah.
We don't mind. We don't want to be too close to you. But it is, it's a very, if you ever look at the Norwegian bus queue, if you want to Google something, and but people have taken a very, pragmatic approach to it. They said, you know, if the rules say you should do this, then we'll do it. But there's been quite a general appreciation to get it done and make sure that people don't get sick.
Yeah, and get through this safely, which is
exactly.
And I've talked to a lot of IT folks who said they actually got busier. That the need for more infrastructure, the need to keep everyone working from home, like it's been pretty intense for everyone.
It's being like you can't get a webcam for love nor money in this city.
Oh, well, that's true.
I would say that the online retailers I know IKEA in Norway has been open. That's one of the things. Mm-hmm. I know they sold out of all their business desks and home office stuff. I was talking to my father-in-law. He works with a glass company, as in for doing double glazing and stuff. And they were selling out stuff as well. For IT people, what we're finding now is that, you know, everyone needs more infrastructure, need more security precautions. Mm-hmm. They're all worried about like what's going to happen with all the files that have been littered at home offices where people have been working maybe on home devices, iPads and other things where traditionally they would have been working in the office.
Right.
So there's been a bit of that. And there's also, you know, the general pressure on just underground infrastructures like, you know, fiber and cable and stuff like that as well has been kind of busy and trying to keep this core backbone working.
But you, I think I bring up an interesting point as a security person. It's like if you were still counting on the office as the perimeter, mm-hmm. the office network was the perimeter, which we've been advocating against for years now.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly that, you know, you're in trouble.
Hugely.
Because suddenly everyone's trying to work from home. And so you're trying to extend the office network out to individual homes. That's a tough way to work.
And, you know, VPNs are meant to be, you know, when you need people want to work, you know, on a Friday evening or mm-hmm. they have to do stuff, they have to log in the afternoon, the evening. It's not meant to be for the entire organization
to be
all outside of that condenser and all of that endpoints.
It probably won't surprise you that of this pandemic series of a dozen or so shows so far, the number one downloaded is the one I did with Richard Hicks about VPNs. You know,
it kind of would be.
Yeah.
Oh, really? That is very surprising.
Surprise!
water wet.
Yes.
You're right, because everybody has, like, our corporate network requires us for certain internal applications to run on a VPN,
right.
Email, Teams, etc. or not. But, you know, if you're not that kind of organization which has a remote work policy or remote work culture, that shift must have been massive where IT people have said, well, the quickest way we can do this is stand up a ton of VPN endpoints and just deploy a VPN client and tell people to click this or run Microsoft Direct Connect or something to that effect. And just even that you have to roll out very carefully. But imagine just this, IT people are scrambling to get VPNs up and running and then hoping no one tries to attack them.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, hope's not a great strategy. Let's face it, right? Like that's not the way to work.
Well, that's for sure.
Generally speaking, I've found it's organizations that if they already had a strong work from home culture, just sort of stepped it up a notch. The ones that were struggling more were, we did this only for this sales team, and now we need to do it for the whole organization. And that, I don't know that you could start from scratch, not at this time, just because there's so much to do and there's so little resource and infrastructure available.
You know, they had this Azure where was actually, we found there was a limit of cloud resources mm-hmm. the first time. Where like free or pay as you go. No, it was the free accounts got kind of their VMs got shifted off and other kind of things like that. There was a general resource shortage because of people needing to stand up teams and other infrastructure. It's the same. Like my wife works for a bank. She has to work with files, so she has to go to the office. But they have a strong kind of remote office policy when they need to for people. So they were okay. And I talked to other companies. Like you said, they had no idea what to do and they were struggling mm-hmm. because they had to conform to the legal or the government's advisories on it. But they still needed to be able to work. So there was a progressive drop and there was also a very strong kind of, oh, let's hope this all works and then try and fix it in production.
Yeah. Well, I need to, you know, stay functioning one way or the other. At the same time, mm-hmm. clearly the black hats have taken advantage of this. I had a great conversation with Ann Johnson a few weeks back, mm-hmm. cybersecurity at Microsoft. And she's like, you know, it's not the number of attacks have not increased, but the targeting of the attacks that they are specifically going after pandemic talks, like pressing against the anxiety of regular people mm-hmm. in their manipulations, which, mm-hmm. I mean, it's horrifying that that's the mindset of some folks, but it does, in some ways, I think, help us in security. It's like, you know what they're going for.
Well, you know, I one of the things that gets me every time is that people go, oh my God, I can't believe they did this. And I've always said, well, you know, they see a target and you are a target and they go, well, how am I going to hit that?
Yeah.
And if we go back to basic social engineering, one of the normal ones we use is FOMO, fear of missing out mm-hmm. or putting you under pressure or putting you in a, what we call a hot state, a position where we know if you're frustrated or if you're upset or if you're kind of something's going on, you'll do something wrong. And when you have a massive amount of anxiety, like you said, about COVID-19, they're going to use that because they just see that as an extra lever for just getting their job done.
And fear a way more powerful tool than greed, right?
Yes.
That the we're going to shut down your bank account threat is a more effective threat than I want you to transfer $10 million for me and you get to keep some. Mm-hmm. In terms of phishing, the fear seems to be the power one. And what's more fearful right now?
And this is you know, there's an experiment. If you wanted to walk down the main street of your city or your town or wherever, and you had $100 or 100 of your local currency, and you try to give it to someone, mm-hmm. they will go, "What's wrong with it?
Yes.
Why?
Yeah.
You know." Whereas if you threaten someone or do something, you'll get results. But if you actually offer people something, they get really kind of cautious.
Oh,
so
yeah.
The idea is, like we've always talked about the old phishing scams where, you know, the Nigerian prince or the person who's died and has a extravagant amount of money.
Right, the inheritance.
And you get a percentage, which would be having you never having to worry about money ever again if you give a smaller amount of money up front to enable a bank account. So that particular attack has become well known. But the newer ones are much more sophisticated, mm-hmm. but relying on the same techniques. And it's probably the topic which I wanted to talk to you about today, which was a thing called business email compromise.
All right, specifically business email.
Yes, and I was really hoping you'd lead with like, so Niall, what's on the top of your inbox today?
there'll be no email puns today, Niall. Just restrain yourself, honestly. Serious business,
Richard. The serious business today. Okay. Well, no more laughing. Business email compromise is just an evolution of phishing.
Okay.
What they'll do now is attackers will inject themselves into your network and then monitor or observe email traffic, mm-hmm. By either adjusting mail rules. So they get CC'd or BCC'd on everything, to learn how your place works, how your business works.
Wow.
So this is really like, this is where it gets really funky. Then what they'll do is they will impersonate the person they want to get something done from.
Right.
And then use the language that has been provided before. So it looks normal.
So they're doing some intelligence first. They're watching, learning the hierarchy, learning like the purchase order rules by looking at the workflow.
Yes. Now, if you ask any developer, normally, developers, when they go into a project, they will learn how stuff works so they can understand the process and then model that out. This is exactly the same scenario here. They are modeling how stuff works, understanding who's in power, how their tone in email. In other words, you know, we always, I don't know if you've watched the Marvel movie, Captain Marvel.
Have not, but go with it.
Okay. All right, go with it. But there's a whole thing with the Skrulls. The Skrulls are these shapeshifters, mm-hmm. and then you have the Kree and all this type of thing. But the Skrulls being imitators don't always know who they're imitating, so sometimes make mistakes. So you can imagine if I came up to you and said, "Hello, Richard, would you like a glass of gin?" And you'd be going, "What is wrong with Niall?"
Yeah.
You know, Niall has never said this before. So this is exactly the same thing. It would automatically set off alarm bells in your head. So what they do is they learn the tone. They watch how the people, you know, if they make a same misspelling, they might inject that. They will use, of course, it could come from the email internal. So they'll be able to compromise that as well. And they'll then send an email to, for example, the CEO, from the CEO or the CFO, and say to accounts on a Friday when it is month end or even quarter end or half end.
Right.
And say, "You need to transfer this to an account. We haven't paid them. Can you transfer $1 million to this and just we'll sort it out?" And if you send it from a high enough ranking person to a minion somewhere else or someone who's under pressure.
And the language is right, like the structure is right, you might actually get them to pull the trigger on that.
Yeah. And do you want to know who did it lately?
No. You've got an actual case?
I have got a very good case. You remember I told you about the Norwegian oil fund?
Mm-hmm.
Right. One of their investment companies called Norfund got done for $10 million.
Wow.
I know it's small biggies in comparison to what's in that fund.
Yeah, I know.
But they were in that company for about 3 or 4 months doing lateral movement. Okay. So this is not connected to the Norges Bank or the investment management, which do the actual whole $1 trillion investment thing. Mm-hmm. But this is their kind of where they invest in certain other projects around the world. There's like, they do a lot of stuff with this.
And so a $10 million transfer, totally normal.
Exactly. Very much so. It literally is like you giving out 10 bucks to buy coffee type thing. It is that kind of money,
right,
for them. So what happened was they were in this happened, I think, around, was it May 30th or no, March 30th, and wasn't discovered till, I think, late April, mid May, and only discovered when they tried to do the same thing a second time.
Oh my goodness. So they had gotten away with it.
They'd gotten away with 10 million US, by either, I haven't got the specifics in front of me, so I'm not going to do it, but what they had probably done was sent a phony invoice to the purchasing department and got it signed off by the CFO, which was them. So the money got transferred out, or they changed an account where the money should have been transferred to.
Right.
So this is a very common thing. Like, another one of this is very often where you'll compromise an employee's an account.
Right.
So their business account. You'll send an email to HR and payroll saying, listen, I've got a new bank account. Can you change my bank account to this number? And they'll find someone relatively, you know, medium ranking, nothing too crazy. And they'll get a straight paycheck from somebody transferred to their account. That's gone.
Yeah. I mean, not as much money and probably more. It's not $10 million, but still, it might take a little while to catch on to that too. You might get a couple of paychecks before people notice.
Well, yeah. The thing is, especially if you have a large company and you do it, like, for example, a multinational, and you do it through three or four different places, you could get, three or four different or five different employees' accounts. And that, let's assume they're in IT, so they're going to be fairly well paid. Mm-hmm. Or if you get someone in accounts, then whatever. But the person who doesn't get paid will notice very quickly, but that money will be gone.
Yes.
Because it's automatic. It's done as a payroll run.
Yeah.
It's probably been prepared well in advance. Like, talk about 10 days in advance before it's sent to payments. And then it's all done automatically. So yeah. Trying to get that back, because the bank will have sent it. They won't be able to recover it. They'll be sitting in, it'll be some accounting system that won't be able to get it back. So right. you're sitting there going, this is how they're doing it. And yeah. They're doing it from stuffed credentials or weak passwords, et cetera, where they're logging into systems and then just learning what's going on.
That's fascinating. And Niall, I'm going to interrupt for one moment for this very important message. Your users are working remotely, and the bad guys know it. New phishing attacks are already landing in the inboxes of your users. Are those computers as protected as they would be if they were on premises? If their machine catches ransomware, how fast can you get it fixed? Don't be the IT admin who could have done something, but didn't. Block the badness and prevent business continuity problems at the source by using PolicyPack on your remote work Windows 10 machines. With PolicyPack, you get the power to manage applications and browsers on Windows 10, overcome application UAC prompts, block unknownware, dynamically configure the Windows 10 start screen, taskbar, and file association. As a bonus, you can use PolicyPack to deliver any real on-prem group policy and group policy preferences settings to your remote work machines for the security and configuration they need. Learn how thousands of other admins enhance their remote work scenarios. Come to policypack.com/remotework to learn more. That's policypack.com/remotework. PolicyPack, securing your standards. And listeners to this podcast are eligible to win a free copy of the Cybex Wiley book entitled MDM, Fundamental Security and the Modern Desktop, Using Intune Autopilot in Azure to Manage, Deploy, and Secure Windows 10 by Jeremy Moskowitz, Enterprise Mobility MVP. Simply pick Run As Radio in the dropdown when you visit policypack.com/remotework. Good luck, and we hope you win. And we're back. It's Run As Radio. I'm Richard Campbell. That's Niall Merrigan. We're talking a little cybersecurity, specifically business email compromise. So starting at the beginning of this, the typical opening compromise is just a successfully hacked password to an account?
It would very often be. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of companies who don't use two-factor authentication.
Right.
So this, if people are going, oh, how do I prevent this? Two-factor off.
Yeah, or multi-factor off, period.
Something.
Yeah.
Not a single point of failure with an account.
And least of all, a flippant password.
Exactly. And you should also make sure that if you've got high-risk targets, CFO, anyone at C-level, C-suite, PAs to the C-suite are very often a very high-value target, even though they don't seem to be. But, if John is the PA to Mary, the CEO,
right.
the John has control over Mary's diary and everywhere Mary goes.
Yeah, more saliently, it's like when an email comes from John, it's presumed to be from Mary.
Yes.
So you still have the effect that's important, right? That
yes.
You can ask somebody to do something even slightly unusual with some urgency and they'll probably agree.
Exactly. And that is how this works. Mm-hmm. So they will know, they'll read the tone. So if you look at, like, for example, if you use Troy Hunt's fabulous Have I Been Pwned service,
yes.
And you know, he's a friend. This thing is a great way to keep, you can sign up, you can get your organization underneath the hood and they can, if there's been a breach, they'll know if there's emails compromised or whatever. Because if those credentials are in place, people will be using them. So that's one of the things you can do. And that'll help you stop this. But putting minimum two-factor authentication in place and educating your users not to use this as a good thing, then this will help a lot.
Password rotations?
No. Believe it or not, no. I'm glad you brought it up. I was hoping you would. I'm assuming this is a very Microsoft-centric audience on your side.
Mm-hmm.
Good. So we have like Office 365, right. Which we would be using our Microsoft 365 now. And if you go to something like the Secure Score or in Microsoft's 365 suite, mm-hmm. it gives you this great way to understand how well your protection is working and what controls you can put in place to give you a better security posture. And number one on for most people is resetting, what is it? Let me just have a look at it here for you quickly. But it said, do not reset password or do not rotate passwords. Because very often what happens is, you know, when you start in a company, you might get summer 2020.
Right.
And 90 days later, you got to change it. You'll do summer 2021. And very often you can say, how long has someone been in here in the company? Well, if divide the digits in their password by four, and you can probably tell how long they've been here. Because if it's 22, you know, oh, they've been here 5.5 years.
Right.
Well, it's divided by four, 5.5 years. So this concept is that if you let people use a long, complex password without some pragmatic words or typical dictionary words, they will keep that because it'll become muscle memoried in.
Sure.
They won't use it again, but it means then it becomes very often the very difficult thing to break.
Although, again, if you can get them to actually use password managers so that every password is different and changing is not a big deal.
Yes. But, small steps, Richard. Small steps.
But if I'm going to have that fight, I'm going to have it with the CXO, right? Like with the chief financial officer, it's like you must use a password manager and every one of your passwords is going to be different. And like you're going to have to sit with them to get that set up on their phone and on their tablet and on their PC and like get them into that routine. Heck, I'm still fighting to get my family to use the LastPass family feature. It's like they all want the Netflix account, right? Like,
yeah, but you know this. So I have a good one. I have a good little story for you about Netflix. You know, Netflix has a minimum password requirement of four,
mm-hmm.
and the reason for that is so that you can put it in on a TV,
right?
PIN number, whatever, because, you know, I have an 89 character password for Netflix.
I was feeling good about my 25, but okay.
Now I'll tell you what happens. Like, someone says, can I, you know, what's your Netflix password? And I said, you can do this. And they said, what do I do with that? And I said, type it in very carefully. But they said, well, what happens? I said, well, you can spend the half an hour trying to put that in with your remote controller. You can buy your own.
Right. Yeah.
And all of a sudden, all these people who want to borrow your Netflix account don't exist anymore.
You're a little less enthusiastic, right?
Yes, because they're going, how the hell do I do this? But you're right. Do you know one of the selling points I've used for LastPass or any password manager?
Mm-hmm.
It becomes a digital will. Me, anyone else who's, we live in a digital age, so we have passwords and they're the keys to everything. So if, for example, I was hit by a bus tomorrow or COVID-19 takes me or whatever, my wife has emergency access to LastPass where she just sends an email. If I don't reply within 7 days, she gets access to it and it gives her access to every single account.
Right.
Everything has.
So this is,
she doesn't know the password for the NAS, for example.
No, or why would she want to?
She's got me for that.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
and that's huge.
But even taking this out of the family, this is business continuity. If the CFO is down, you know, for whatever reason, and there are certain accounts that they have access to that we may need, So having it in a password management strategy where you can break glass in an emergency to get access to it, that seems literally straight up business continuity rules here.
One of the things I've used for my people is that I said, listen, you know, passwords are hard. You don't want to have to remember them. Wouldn't it be better if you just smiled at your phone and it logged you in? Wouldn't that be great? Like Windows Hello supports this. You know, and this is something that I think we should be doing. And it, like we talk about multi-factor for business email compromise, we talk about passwords. These things are difficult for our normal users and stuff that we find it took us, like, I'm going to ask you, how long did it take you to get into the habit of LastPass or any type of password manager once you started it?
Weeks.
Yes.
And when did I love it? It took a year. It took a year before I could not go back. It also took a year to get every password changed, to finally have done the security challenge and to get all the passwords changed. It took a year, but also, and now I realize almost quarterly, I'm now deleting account.
Yeah.
Because the other thing it tells me is like, you're not using this. So the fact that it knows all the places that I have accounts and so you know, every so often you go through and you change the important, you change your PayPal password and your Facebook password and so forth, which it makes trivially simple to do. But also just sort of looking at someone going,
click button done.
Yeah. Why do I have this account? Like, I'm never going back there again. And you actually remove the account.
You know, I have a MySQL Workbench account because I had to download the MySQL software at one point to do some looking at some SQL database dump. And it said, I of course, I'd repaved the machine, everything done. I hadn't had Chocolaty installed, but you know, I went and I goes and it says, you were last visited here 471 days ago.
Right.
I was like, wow. But you know, we talk about stuff going into escrow in companies, software in escrow. We talk about keys. We talk about all this digital stuff that we need to have in place. But we forget sometimes that people like CFOs will have access to bank accounts to be able to be the only ones who can authorize XYZ. And in the case of emergency, how do you do this? Well, you should really have a very strong password services, and this is where you would use a password manager. Like, for example, we've been talking a bit about LastPass, and I know it has Active Directory integration, which means that, you know, you can assign people different, once they log in, they will get access to the password, corporate password vaults that they need to. But then when they leave the company, they won't be able to do anything else with them. Or you can rotate for everybody. So everyone doesn't have a single, one copy of this in their own LastPass vault. So this is one of those kind of things that we should be doing on a regular basis. And that's why Secure Score is really handy for helping you kind of understand your threat model, because it runs through and says, you're not doing this. You should be doing this. And here's this will give you a plus 6 or 7% increase in your security posture. So you can go and look at the like high level ones and say, these 3 or 4 will give us a 25% increase in how vulnerable we are, not vulnerable we are. And like, if you have an Azure P2, for example, there's a like risky logins, people who, you know, where they're coming from different countries or unknown, or what we call impossible travel.
Right.
That's a phenomenal feature that especially for what we call high value targets, people that you know are going to be targeted. And if they try and log in at like 2 o'clock in the morning from Italy, when they're based out of Calgary, you know, they probably didn't get there that quickly.
Might not have been them. Although I've certainly had the incident where a device left on my desk at home auto logged into an account for whatever reason while I was in Italy, and the thing locked me down, like bang. But that's also that kind of security where you're delighted. It's like, wow, I love that worked.
Yes.
Now turn it back on. Thanks very much. Yes, I am in Italy.
It reminds me of when I was in Seattle and I had bought a coffee in Starbucks, and then went downstairs to Helly Hansen and bought a jacket for $700.
Right.
Okay. It was because Helly Hansen was actually cheaper in Seattle than it was in Norway, even though it's produced in Norway. Anywho, the...
But you also profiled a credit card hack. You make a cheap transaction, and if that works, then you do an expensive transaction.
The bank rang me within 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Excuse me, Mr. Merrigan, are you in Seattle? I'm like, yes, I am. Why do you ask? He says, well, can you tell us your last 2 or 3 purchases? And I said, this, and he goes, oh, good. He goes, would you next time inform us when you're leaving? I'm like, you're worse than my mother.
Yeah. I'm going to make happy noises to you, but not a chance in the world.
Of course I will. Next time, yes. Please reinstate my card.
Yes, Dad. Sorry, Dad.
It's my money, goddammit.
Obviously, multi-factor is the solution here. In terms, I've talked to a few IT folks who are doing that now, where they are making a conscious effort to call the CFO about transactions because they are remote. Because they used to just like poke the head in the door and say, hey, I'm going to do this thing you asked for. And on more than one occasion, found out didn't ask for it.
Yeah.
And now that you don't have that door drop by, and you kind of have to do a little more ritual.
And this is where, you know, if you have some other stuff in place like monitoring or a SOAR, CM, the security orchestration and automation response, those things will help you track kind of this type of what we call unnatural or unusual behavior. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those things that, you know, we always talk about how long someone would be inside your network before you realize they're there. And that's usually, they say, 180 days. On average is about a year before you realize you've been breached. But you know, that if you've got an IT person who actually stops in and says, listen, did you ask for that? Just checking. And they have that conversation. That's great. But you know, if the CFO is remote, like you say, they do have to have this kind of maybe queue all the jobs together and then go through every single one, especially for the ones that are kind of potentially have an exposure problem for the company.
Right. Yeah.
And this is the problem now. We are in a remote situation, and that's where people are needing to learn. I think when we started, before we talked on the podcast, I have more meetings now than I've had before because people don't have that drop by ability.
Right.
You know, I see my calendar looks like a bad game of Tetris on a good day, you know, and it's important to realize that, you know, you have to probably find that rhythm with the people who are going to be doing this and say, listen, we're going to have to take once every day a quick check of the following type of cases. Especially just to make sure that who it was done by and authorized. I was asked by our payroll department, how would they solve it? And I says, well, if you get an email from somebody asking them to, say, change their account, you should ring them on their authorized telephone or ring them on Skype with video and verify their identity.
Right. Yeah. You need to do that check-in. Like, so, I mean, I appreciate that there's some policy around this as well as this don't get hacked. But I kind of, you know, you never even offered the idea of don't get hacked.
No, and don't put it on your users. Like this is unfortunate. We are technologists. We should be able to solve a lot of things. There's not everything in the world, even right now, can be solved through code. There's a lot of other outsides of this. But the thing is that, you know, have a little bit of sympathy and empathy and say, okay, how can I make it easier so that they feel like if something goes wrong, that they can come to me and I don't go, oh, you stupid person.
Yes.
It's more, okay, great. You come to us. That's the first step. Let's solve this. Let's get it done. And, you know, and make sure that they're, you know, people are actually helping you. They're their first line of defense. So don't treat them like, you know, idiots and, you know, the responsibles, but treat them like it's, you know, this person's going to help me do my job better. So what tools can I put in place so they don't have to think about it, remove that mental load. And then also kind of, how do I make the processes better for us as a company and as an industry?
Yeah. No amount of, I told you so helps. And especially now.
Mm-hmm. Hugely. And it's very unfortunate that we sit very often with this kind of blame culture first. Oh, you shouldn't have clicked that link. Why did you do that? And I'm like, okay, what could we have done so they wouldn't have done that? You know,
I've been fighting against that by pulling out the Steve Jobs line. You're holding it wrong, right? Like at any moment when you're blaming the user, and it doesn't matter whether it's software, security, it's like, it's all the moment you do that, like, dude, is he really holding it wrong? Like, come on. That is not a viable argument.
You know what? You pulling that out of the air is just, it's a very good, I'm going to use that because it's like, you know, what you're holding the phone wrong.
Yeah.
Seriously, it's a phone. What do you mean I'm holding it wrong?
It is simply an absurd argument and you need to, you know, be more careful next time. Not a strategy, right?
Like, no, that's... put it in place, get it right. and it's very difficult. These times are hard. There's a lot of mental load. There's a lot of anguish. There's a lot of uncertainty going on. Try and make it easier for you doing your own job so that you don't have to worry about your people, but also so that, you know, if something does go wrong, you are prepared and other controls then kick into place. You know, we talk, I use my kids as a lot as an example because they're, it was a huge learning curve for me on how to deal with children who don't obey the basic laws of physics or logic.
Civilization?
Lord of the Flies back home. You know? But well, especially when you're trying to get the remote to watch TV in the morning. Mm-hmm. I had to kind of teach and put some other controls in place so they wouldn't get hurt.
Yeah.
But you still also teach them, like, you know, you can house-proof the child or you can child-proof the house. You have to do a bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you kind of say, okay, put some controls in place, but don't make the security too, I won't say invasive, because people are very adept at finding their way around stuff.
Yes.
But do kind of put a certain amount of, this is also your responsibility and here's what you need to do, but make it easy.
Yeah. Not too much load. I also appreciate things like password managers and so forth. This ultimately makes your life better. Like, makes things easier. And if you don't present it as you must have the security. It's, you present it as, I'm here to make your life easier.
Yeah.
That this is less struggle, ultimately.
The quickest one I've used for people that says, you know, your mobile phone. And then, yeah, tell me what XYZ's number is. They go, I don't know. I says, how would you normally find? Oh, I'll go get my phone. And then I was like, there you go.
Yeah.
I said, imagine having that for all the passwords. But I have the one password. And I'm like, yeah, but if I steal that, I have access to it.
Yeah, I have everything. Nobody's confused about one password is bad. Like, everybody knows that. It's just that none of the answers to it are easy.
That's true, actually.
Except for the password manager. And the password manager represents a little bit of front load. Getting the software in all the right places. Getting the account configured in all the right places.
Mm-hmm.
And then the really time-consuming part, which is now go start changing those darn passwords. But you can do it.
You know, when Windows Hello turned up and I got it running on my home machine, I installed a Brio to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
I was so happy because I can just smile at my PC and log in.
Yes.
And then I repaved the box and I was like, you need your password. I'm like, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
I have to go dig out my phone and go, okay, what is this? And of course, it's a long, complex password. And I'm like, oh, mother of God.
Yeah, what have I done?
I'm glad I only do this once.
Yeah. Which is what you want, right? Is that you have to do that once and then you sort of breach your way through that layer and then the rest of the stuff sort of falls into play.
It's a very strong thing that, like you say, password managers, they will reduce load. They do take some time to get used to. But, you know, multi-factor auth or two-factor auth will protect you against PEC. It protects against what they say 99.9% of internet threats like this.
Yeah.
Because breach passwords is the basic compromise.
But you're not passing it. You're not forcing every employee. You really need to start from the top down. And you're kind of saying it in a socially constructive way. Listen, you're so important to the company that we need
flattery
to secure
will get
you.
Richard.
Dude, right? Like, most of the time they're looking at us like we have foil hats. So, you know, anything we can do to just seem, you know, a little more appealing, I think is wildly important to being able to persuade them that we need to do this. You don't want to be the CFO who has to explain to the board why $10 million got transferred to nobody we know.
And, you know, in these times, like, we're talking about the fact that companies are going under because no one's buying on other things. You can imagine that if someone was to take away half your liquidity in, like, your reserve funds or whatever,
yes,
that would put you in a position that, you know, tomorrow you might have to fold, or, you know, I think it's in Chapter 11 in the US, or file bankruptcy.
Yeah.
This is important to know. So this has a very strong connotation of, like, if someone was to steal a certain amount of money from you, how affected would you be?
Yeah.
So I know people who, you know, if they don't get a paycheck, they don't live, you know, they live from paycheck to paycheck. There's a lot of this in the world right now, that if someone was to take their paycheck just due to someone being email frauded, like, could you afford to pay them a second time?
Yeah. Much less a bunch of people.
Yeah.
It's just sort of a reality of, you know, it's interesting, the idea that we may not be able to stop the breaches.
Yeah.
But what if the result of them breaching us was to say, hey, we're not going to be able to steal anything here successfully. And they give up.
Yes. Like, you know, and it's like the idea of, like, you know, if you break into a house and everything's bolted down, you know, but it's not so much that, but we also want to make sure that if something goes wrong, like, we talk about this thing called information rights management, which we can have another conversation about some other time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if data gets out, can it be remain where it's supposed to be, or get people to keep access to it only when they need to? The same thing happens here with this type of where people are actively going in, monitoring and trying to match your tone and your way of working. And then just seemingly like, you know, that whole that random, we've all seen the spy movies where this random person just walks past and you get a fleeting glimpse of them. But you know later on that that's going to be a key person in this whole drama you're watching. It's the same thing here. That just this, you might notice this looks a bit funny, but because it's the CFO and she looks like she's right, I'll allow it.
Yeah.
But if the wording was wrong, you know, it would trigger alarms. But people are worried and people are nervous, and they're also working under a lot heavier loads right now. They have home office. They probably have the kids at home. I don't know if you've ever tried to do home office when you have small, tiny hackers trying to get at your PC. It's hard.
Yeah.
Papa, can I watch Peppa Pig on your computer while you're trying to debug XYZ in Azure? No.
Yeah.
You know?
You never let me do anything.
Well, I did find the perfect use for Azure last week.
Mm-hmm.
I set up a Minecraft server for my son.
You're a good man.
I was there going. So the first thing I did was I set up Minecraft. I installed Windows Server off to the Azure portal, did all the bits, downloaded the Bedrock server, set it up, and then hardened it so that him and all his friends can just log in safely, and they're only in that nest then.
Right.
And then of course the nerd in me is all going, how can I automate this and package it and then make it available for other fathers and mothers who want to do the same thing for their kids.
Well, and it's social. Assets for your kids too. They're the place that all their friends want to hang out. That's pretty cool. Hey, Niall, such a fun conversation about a really serious topic, actually. And it just brings to light all the more realizing that the black hats are getting smarter. We need to get smarter too.
Hugely.
I appreciate your time, friend, and stay safe. Thank you.
Cheers, man. Have a good one.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.